Welcome to a Sunny Side Up Life podcast, a show for the woman who is ready to live an abundant life full of freedom and positivity. I'm your host, Sammy Womack, a nationally recognized money expert, budgeting coach, and your very own hype squad. I'm on a mission to help you break free from survival mode, gain financial freedom, stay motivated, and focus on what matters most. Join the movement and let's start living on the brighter side of life together. Just a reminder that everything discussed in today's episode will be linked in the show notes. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at A Sunny Side Up Life. If you're ready to take control of your money and need guided instructions, check out my free budgeting challenge by going to asunnysideuplife.com. Now, let's get into the episode. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode. Today, we are going to talk about how to teach our kids about money. So I asked over on Instagram a few weeks ago what topics you guys wanted to hear about for the last few episodes of this season. And this was an overwhelming topic. So here we are. We're going to dig into this today. So I think that this is a super important topic for two different reasons. First reason being that this is overwhelmingly one of the things that I hear from almost every single client that signs up to work one-on-one with me is that they didn't learn a lot about money growing up. Their parents just either didn't have the knowledge themselves, or they were kind of like weirded out by talking about money for whatever the reason was. And a lot of us didn't really grow up knowing what to do with money. So then the second layer of that is that, okay, so how do we break that cycle and do better with the next generation of kids? Whether you're a parent yourself, you're an aunt, you're an uncle, you're a teacher, whoever you are, if you have little ones in your life, how do we be a better influence on them and not let them repeat a lot of the mistakes that we made basically as an entire generation? So there's a couple different reasons I think of why we ourselves didn't learn a lot about money growing up. And this is kind of what I see exemplified in my clients a lot is either one, maybe our parents had money, at least upper middle class or maybe upper class, and it wasn't really a topic of stress. There was kind of always plenty to go around. We didn't really, you know, maybe you didn't really want for anything. Maybe you had vacations and you weren't really sure how they got paid for. They were just there. So it wasn't really a topic of stress. So therefore, it wasn't really a topic of conversation. And I hear this every once in a while from my clients. But mostly I hear from clients is that money was a negative topic growing up. We grew up poor, we grew up middle class, we grew up lower middle class, somewhere in there. We grew up paycheck to paycheck, basically. We grew up in debt, and it was either a topic that caused fights between our parents, or we grew up hearing, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, and that was kind of our only explanation, or we can't have that because we're broke, but there was kind of no explanation. And that's kind of how my husband and I both grew up. We both grew up in very much paycheck to paycheck kind of lifestyles. We both grew up with, you know, hardworking parents, but kind of never really getting anywhere. Both of our mothers now are nearing retirement and dealing with their own kind of financial issues as they're nearing retirement. And so for us, we're trying to kind of learn lessons from them. We both grew up in kind of that scarcity. You know, we didn't really have name brand clothes. We didn't go on fancy vacations. We traveled here and there, but it wasn't anything like super exciting. Both of us just traveled internationally when we went to Costa Rica this past November. That was both of our first times to even leave the country. And, you know, he kind of grew up in a household where, you know, seeing vehicles get repossessed. I grew up in a household. My parents filed bankruptcy when I was about 4. And so then, you know, until I was 11, of us not being able to finance a car or anything like that. I kind of grew up around a little bit of credit card abuse, kind of maxing out credit cards, things like that. And so for us, we just thought a lot of this kind of stuff was normal. And I hear that a lot from my clients as well. So how do we break this cycle, right? How do we break this cycle? Well, for me, I feel like a lot of our parents raised us to believe if you can just make more money slash go to college, you'll be fine. So if you can get a better education than we had, or you can make more money than we had, or both, you're going to be fine. That's the problem. I always heard like, that's the problem. Me and your mom, we didn't go to college. Like, neither one of my parents finished college. My husband's parents didn't go to college. And so we were always taught, go to college, you'll be fine. Make six figures, you'll be fine. So that's what we did. I was the first generation college graduate. My husband was first generation six-figure earner. And we thought, hey, we're going to, two heads together and we're going to do great here with this college education and this $100,000 income. And that was not true necessarily. So here we are with this above average income, this first generation college degree, and we learned the hard way that you can't necessarily out earn bad money habits. And I hear this from my clients all the time as well. So I think number one, that is the first lesson that I think we have to pass on to our kids is yes, an education is important. Yes, having a good solid income is important, but it's not always a replacement for bad money habits. So we kind of have to do both. And I hear this, I see this all the time with my clients is they, have a good income, but they just have a more expensive house, more expensive cars. They send their kids to more expensive schools. They go on expensive vacations. They buy more expensive clothes. And so your income, it's that lifestyle creep, and their income is just still a ratio with their spending. So, you can still spend 70% of your income on junk, whether your income is 50,000 or 500,000, right? You can still spend more than you make, regardless of how much your income is. So we have to learn those good spending habits, have that financial literacy to accompany this good education and these maybe higher earning jobs. So I think that it's important both ways. And, I feel like a lot of us grew up thinking that, well, if you just had a savings account and you just pinched pennies, that would do it. Or if you could just win the lottery, that would do it. And we're just kind of finding out that, maybe this wasn't the best financial advice. So we're going to dig into maybe how we can pass on a little bit of better financial advice to the next generation. So there is this study from the University of Cambridge, and I've heard this from several different universities throughout the year. I hear this kind of floating around the internet all the time, is that things like budgeting, delayed gratification, savings, things like that are those habits and patterns are kind of typically placed in your brain by about age 7. And I hear this a lot because I go down rabbit holes, as a homeschooling parent through parenting and education type books as well. And I kind of, I venture into the gentle parenting kind of mindset as well. And I hear lots of things like this is your kids kind of have that internal voice around age 7 or so, which means that these are things that are in their subconscious. Okay. These are things that you're not showing them a textbook at age 5 and teaching them, how to do an Excel spreadsheet and teaching them about the stock market necessarily at, age 6, 7, around then. It is a lot of exemplification. It is a lot of they see our habits. They hear our words. They recognize our body language. They know if mom and dad are fighting about money. You know, it's a lot of that kind of cues. And which that goes along the whole thing of, you know, kind of gentle parenting is like that. If they're used to hearing the yelling and the stress and the anxiety, you know, that gets into their subconscious. It's all kind of on that same conversation, right? But in a way, to me, that is kind of good news. Because to me, it means that it is a lot of our body language, the words that we use, what kind of, for lack of a better word, what kind of vibes we put off about money. It's not necessarily the textbooks and the stock market and all of that kind of stuff that are the most important things. It is were their fights. It is, you know, what was kind of the attitude towards money. Was there a scarcity or was there an abundance kind of mindset? Also, this means to me that we have to cut ourselves a little bit of slack when we are reparenting ourselves about money. Because a lot of these things, a lot of these inner voices that we hear about money, a lot of these mindsets and habits and things like that are so deeply rooted in our subconscious. Of course, it's going to be hard to reparent ourselves, to unlearn these bad habits, to unlearn these mindsets and this inner dialogue that's going on. Because this is stuff that's been set for 30 or 40 years, right? It's deep, deep embedded in there. So on that part, like, cut yourself a little bit of slack as you're reparenting yourself and teaching yourself about money. And also realize with your own kids that a lot of it is just going to be about having conversations in front of them. It's going to be about a lot of subtleties, I guess, is a good way of saying that. It's going to be a lot of subtleties. It's not always going to be the sitting them down with a textbook and a calculator, right? It's going to be just a lot of the conversations. So most of us, if you're listening to this, this is probably your cup of tea. We have been reparenting ourselves a lot about money. And of course, we want to do better by our own kids. That's something that I hear from my clients over and over. We get on the topic of, well, I wasn't taught a lot about money, and I want to do even better for my kids. And then there's even the third tier of that conversation is, well, also, I'm probably going to have to take care of my own parents at least a little bit in retirement, if not completely. So here we are as millennials. Let me get on my millennial soapbox. As we're reparenting ourselves, we're trying to parent the next generation, and we're probably going back and reparenting our own parents and either completely planning on supporting them in retirement or at least partially, or giving them advice while they're still in working years. So maybe we don't to completely support them in retirement. It's fine. You know, millennials, we get blamed for a lot of bad stuff, and I don't think we get enough credit for the good stuff that we are doing. But a lot of us are trying to break these generational curses and to start a new generational cycle. So here we are, you know, and it's a lot of pressure and it's overwhelming. And a lot of us, we weren't taught how to do it ourselves, but yet we know we want to do better. So we're parenting ourselves and parenting our kids at the same time. But the first thing I can say is, if you are kind of overwhelmed with all of that pressure, the best thing that you can do and the first thing that you can do is to remember the putting on your oxygen mask metaphor that they tell you every time you fly on a plane, right? You have to put on your own oxygen mask before you can assist anyone else. You're not going to be any good to anyone else if you are without oxygen. Or in this case, without money. So it does suck, and it is hard to admit out loud. And I know we want to do what's best for our kids, but they can take out student loans. Obviously, we don't want them to. Obviously, we don't want them to repeat the cycle that we have been in. But they can finance college. You cannot finance your retirement. Okay. And if your plan is to not work until literally your last day on earth, we have to kind of do that oxygen mask first and make sure that we are secure, that we have a good foundation. And it is also passing it along to our kids in the sense that giving them the gift of knowing that they will never have to take care of their parents. And that's a gift that a lot of us millennials do not have. Even Gen Xers, right? As you know, the baby boomers are kind of aging. It's a gift that a lot of us don't have. If I never have to borrow money from my kids, mission accomplished, right? If my kids never have to figure out how they're going to help me buy a house or help me buy a car, or, well, if we invite mom on this vacation, we're going to have to pay for it so she can go with us. Or, you know, just all those things. That in itself is a gift that I plan to pass on to my kids. I don't want them to ever worry about having to take care of me. So I'm going to do that first. I'm going to make sure that I myself am taken care of. Although it sounds selfish, it's hard to admit out loud, but it is a gift to pass on to your kids. Okay. So that's the first thing and the best thing that you can do. Put on your own oxygen mask, set a good foundation for yourself, get out of debt yourself, set up your own retirement. Then when that foundation is laid, then help your kids. Okay. And I know that's hard and I know we don't want to admit it, but that's what we have to do. Then, you know, okay, how can we help our kids not take on student loans? How can we help them invest? How can we help them hopefully become millionaires? How can we help them build credit, pay for weddings, college, opening businesses, down payments on houses, cars, all of these things? We're like, yeah, if I had endless amounts of money, of course, that would be so great. And if we're not able to do all of these things, can we do one of them? Or can we, like I said, not pass on being a financial burden to them? Can we at least give them knowledge if we can't leave them financial assets? Sometimes we're like, it's just not going to happen. Like, you know, I'm already 50. I can't. I'm doing good to take care of myself over here. That's a gift enough. Okay. So sometimes we do kind of have to take a little bit of that reality check and be like, maybe all of these things are not possible, but we can pass on the knowledge. We can pass on, you know, the mindset and remove any financial burden, make ourselves not a financial burden. So say all of that's good. Check, check, check. You've put on your own oxygen mask. You're set up for retirement. Okay. Then above and beyond that, let's teach our kids about investing. Let's help them build good credit. One of the things that we just started doing, as some of you might know, our oldest daughter just turned 13 back in February. So we're brand new to this teenager life. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm an expert on teaching teens and young adults about money, because I am just learning as I'm going. But I can pass on what I've learned so far in my 13 years of parenting and what I have learned from my clients and through their experiences. One of the things that we did just do was make our oldest daughter an authorized user on our credit card, because our credit scores are 780s or so. You know, they're good. We both have really good credit scores. There is obviously cons to you putting your child as an authorized user. If you do actually give them the physical card, for us, we opened the account, but we didn't give her the physical card. It's just kind of in the drawer. Maybe when she's older, maybe when she is out, you know, running the roads or doing things, and she maybe in case of an emergency, we'll see when we get there. And there are, you know, kind of the cons. If you do screw up your credit, you're also screwing up your kids' credit. So, you know, make sure that you're really at a stable, healthy relationship with debt and credit if you are doing this. And we're going to talk in a few minutes about ways about investing and things like that. So hold that thought and we'll dig into that in just a little bit. But honestly, I think that all of this starts with financial literacy at home. We're going to jump into setting the foundation. And I think it really is about taking care of the base family budget, living out loud, and teaching them the lessons along the way. And if you're like, yeah, I'm not even there yet. This is something that I do work one-on-one with my clients about and help them kind of juggle. Okay, I want to invest for retirement, but I also want to invest for my kids. How do I juggle? How do I do both? This is something that I do work one-on-one with my clients. So check out the show notes to learn how to work one-on-one with me if that's something that you want to dig into a little bit more. So let's talk about setting up the foundation. So I think for one, as a homeschooling / unschooling family, and you've probably heard me say this before in past podcasts, that one of the best things that we do as a homeschooling family is we live out loud in front of our kids. People are kind of shocked to learn that we really only do textbooks for math and grammar / reading. Everything else is very exemplified out loud. Now, this might change as they approach like high school years, but as of now, as of, you know, they're little, they learn a lot from life. They learn a lot from TV, movies, YouTube, their friends, their co-op group, you know, hands-on activities, field trips, things like that. So kind of how can we be like a homeschooling family about money, even if you're not actually a homeschooling family? Because we know that a lot in public education and even in private schools and stuff, there's not a lot of talk about money. And I think that's also another common complaint from a lot of millennials is we weren't really taught about money from our parents in school, nobody. So if your kids don't have access to that in their actual curriculum, let's bring it in. You know, let's do it as a family. Let's do it from a homeschool approach. We might have to learn it at home, and that's okay. So I think that's about the importance of open communication. That is about when they ask questions, answering them as honestly as you possibly can. Even if it's hard, even if it's awkward, even if you feel like maybe it's not slightly appropriate for them to be asking you how much the house costs or how much money do you make, how else are they going to learn, right? So maybe it's like putting our own insecurities and kind of awkwardness aside and being like, they're trying to learn and this is how they learn. So kind of taking a minute and trying to actually explain why things are the way they are, where money actually comes from, why they can't have the thing that they're asking for, or how much something actually costs, and kind of going into those conversations instead of avoiding them and discouraging them from asking future questions, which I think is how a lot of us were raised. I also try to exemplify to my kids the difference between bills and spending and savings and investing, because all four of those are different things. And so my kids were completely shocked to learn, and I can't even remember how this conversation came up, but they were shocked to learn that we actually had to pay for water and electricity, because to them, they've never known any different, right? When they were babies, before they were born, we did live in a habit of, we did get our electricity disconnected a couple of times. Our cell phone got disconnected once or twice, you know, things like that. But we've been doing budgeting for as long as they can actually remember, and our money has been secure enough that it's not a topic of conversation. It's not an argument of, you know, can we pay the electric bill or not? It's just been paid as long as they can remember. So they were completely shocked to find out that water actually costs money. So maybe when you're frustrated with them for leaving the lights on and leaving the water running, maybe they don't know that it actually costs money. And instead of either not teaching them that at all or just yelling at them, who do you think's paying for that? You know, trying to have the patience, and I'm, you know, obviously not talking from a parenting pedestal at all because I'm not perfect at this, but having those conversations of like, no, it really does cost money, because they don't understand. They just simply don't know unless we explain it to them. And the same conversations around money doesn't grow on trees. Okay, that's not really helpful. Where does money actually come from? How do we actually make money? And also kind of pointing out, that's a job. My oldest daughter is really into edit, like digital editing. She loves to make TikTok videos on her private account and edit videos, and she's always like making stop motions and doing all this kind of stuff. And I said, that's a job. And she's like, wait, that's a job? Like, people really get paid for that? She had no idea that that is actually a career path that she could go down. So it's just kind of having these conversations and not making it so scary to them.
For the past 4 years, I've worked with over 100 clients one-on-one, real women who took action on making big changes to their finances. My coaching sessions are designed to give you completely personalized budgeting support. Together, we'll organize your bills, build better spending habits, pay down your debt, build your savings, and invest for the future. I'll help you get a system in place that will set you up for success for years to come. I'll answer all of your questions along the way, talk you through all of your mindset blocks, and most of all, I'll be there to hold you accountable. So this time will be the time that you'll finally stick to your budget and make those dreams a reality. Visit asunnysetuplife.com/coaching to apply today to see if one-on-one budget coaching is right for you.
Something else we do that obviously it's not accessible to everyone, but we live in a college town. And so we do quite a bit of field trips and stuff at the college, like in the planetarium, or we had a field trip in the geology section, and we got to see rocks and learn about rocks and different things like that. And just walking through the campus with them and making it normal, making it familiar. College doesn't have to be scary. Talking about money doesn't have to be scary. Realizing that there are kind of obscure career paths and that not being weird, and just kind of having those conversations with them. And then also, I think taking the time to explain if something is not in the budget, why it's not in the budget, and teaching them about, needs versus wants. So, for example, one of the things we do is I almost always order groceries on the apps and do pickup. And so what I'll do is I'll put everything I need, meal plans and, of course, my treats and things for the house and things like that. And then I'll hand my phone to one of the girls and say, pass it to your sister when you're done. And they'll add on, their junk that they want, their beauty products, their chips, their ice cream. And then there's sometimes where I have to call them back in and go, why are there 5 bags of chips for 3 kids? That's not going to work. I said you could get one. And so they'll have to narrow down which one they'd rather have. Or sometimes they'll just get an incredible sweet tooth and there'll be all kinds of candy. I'm like, this is not going to work, you guys. And so bring them in and make them narrow it down. And I think that's a really important lesson of it's not about scarcity. You're allowed to have treats, especially if it fits within the grocery budget. And, again, we don't want to give them like eating disorders or a bad relationship with food. You're allowed to have treats. You're allowed to have actual sugar. You're allowed to have spend money on treats. Both are okay. We don't, we can't overdo it. We need to have that balance. And so trying to teach them that balance and letting them narrow it down, I think has been a really good lesson. We kind of do the same thing at the store. So you guys know I'm frugal to a fault. And if I go quote unquote shopping, it's usually at the dollar store or the thrift store. And so what I do with my kids is I will say, I'll set a boundary before we go shopping. And it's usually at the dollar store. I'll kind of say, hey, everybody can get one treat, one thing, one toy, one makeup. I don't care. Just one thing. And so what they'll do is as we're kind of shopping around for the things that we actually need, they're kind of putting things in the cart and we'll get to the end and I'll say, all right, well, you can put things in your maybe pile. That's kind of what we call it. So they'll throw things in, and then before we check out, they have to narrow it down to the one or two things, or if they brought their own money, the $5 they brought, whatever it is, and they choose what they get. Thrift store, you know, we do the same thing. You could, sure, you can put it in the cart. I'm not saying you're going to get it. We're going to go try it on. You're going to see if there's something else you like that you like better. We can put it in the maybe pile. Sure. And so they've really gotten used to doing that, and they're getting better and better about narrowing it down before we actually pay to the limit, the boundary that I've set, or even sometimes at the thrift store, if we're buying clothes, I don't really set a boundary necessarily. Just kind of like, sure, if you find something and it fits and, you know, it's not going to be that much. They will still even kind of purge their own maybe pile on their own and just say, well, you know, I found these literally the other day. Izzy said, I found these slippers that I like better, so I'm going to put this first pair of slippers back, because she was just kind of shopping for some crazy fuzzy slippers. So we do that with toys. We do that with groceries. We do that with clothes, things like that. And I think it's really good to kind of teach them about, you know, comparing prices, making informed decisions, balancing needs and wants, having conversations. Also kind of having the conversation of, do we have the space for it? Do you have the space in your bed for one more Squishmallow? Which is a real conversation that happened just last week. My daughter bought a Squishmallow at a garage sale. And so also them knowing they're responsible for keeping their room clean. We do regular toy purges. They know what they have room for. And I said all that, and she still decided she wanted a Squishmallow. So she's probably going to have to purge more stuffed animals here in a couple months. But, you know, that gets to be her decision. Also, interestingly, something that conversation that's kind of come up lately is the size of our house. And I feel like we have a modest house. You know, I think it's like 1600 square feet, built in the 70s. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it's a nice clean house, but it's not fancy. It's not, you know, impressive. Nobody's like, ooh, you know, that house. It's just, it's an average house. And so the more that I've been letting my kids come along with me to estate sales and garage sales, they are kind of seeing other houses, and they're kind of having these conversations. And my oldest said, I just don't understand, why don't we have a big house with stairs? And my first instinct is to say, like, well, who do you think is going to pay for this house, right? But also, I don't want them to kind of have that scarcity, and I don't know, you know, or kind of saying, well, those people are probably really in debt and we're not. That might not be true. Those people might have worked really hard to get out of debt, and to, you know, they might work really hard at their jobs, and they might legitimately be able to afford that house. I don't know their business. I don't know. And having a big house is not a bad thing. It's just not what I'm choosing to do with my money. So it is kind of, you know, making an age-appropriate conversation, of course. But I always say, well, Daddy and I we choose not to spend all of our money on our house because Daddy wants to quit working when he turns 50. And so for us, we would rather put the money in Daddy's retirement investment. And, you know, they half kind of understand what an investment is. So he can retire when he's 50. And if we wanted to spend all of our money on a big house, we could, but that's not what we're choosing to do with it. Could I buy, you know, a house that's like three times as expensive as mine? Probably not, even if I wanted to. But I just am really conscious of not creating scarcity and also creating choice. This is what we chose to do with our money. Nobody is forcing us to do this. This is what we're doing. So it's not a perfect conversation, but that's kind of what we're doing. So next topic I want to talk about is earning money. So I kind of touched on this earlier, but like, it's not just saying money doesn't grow on trees, having the conversation of why we work, how, like what happens at our job, how much we get paid. You know, my daughters have asked me, well, how much do your clients pay you? you know, how many clients do you have? How much money does daddy make? How, all these different conversations. And I try to answer as truthfully and as age appropriate as possible. And I think it really helps because I don't want to instill a scarcity mindset. Like I said, I do want them to know the value of hard work and know that this money didn't just fall into our laps. And for us, it's also a really important conversation because my husband does work offshore. He is gone for 21 days straight, and he does miss birthdays, holidays, events, things like that. And I want them to know why he's missing them, that he's not just missing it because he just hates being home at Christmas. You know, I want them to know that he's working really hard to take care of us, the family, himself, all of that. And know that the money didn't just magically show up, that the groceries didn't magically just buy themselves, the house didn't magically just buy itself, that he is getting paid to be gone, and that's why he's doing it. So kind of discussing the importance of having a good work ethic and having responsibilities and things like that. Talking about, you know, sometimes we go to work when we don't want to, but also sometimes it's okay to take a mental health day. And where is that balance? And I don't know the perfect balance for that, but having those conversations when they come up. Also, another topic that comes up a lot is earning money, around earning money, is giving our kids allowance. So for us, we have always been really set on, we all live here. We all do chores. We also try to treat our kids with respect, though. They're not our live-in maids and vice versa. They're not our live-in maids. We didn't have them just to wait on us and clean the house and vice versa. Like, we're not their maids either. So we all live here. We all do chores. We all eat the food. We all do the dishes. We all make a mess. We all tidy up, right? Things like that. Your own bed, you make it. The girls, as they are getting older, they are becoming more and more responsible for their own laundry. Our oldest daughter completely does her own laundry. She's to the point now where I don't even remind her. I'll just come out of my office and she'll have a load of laundry going. And I'm like, oh, okay. My little two, it is a little bit more of, hey, you guys haven't done laundry in a while. And I'll have them gather it up, have them drag the laundry basket, have them put it in the washer. I'll point on the washer to what buttons they need to push. And, you know, they'll kind of go from there. So it's kind of a collaborative effort still. But they don't get paid to do dishes or wash their own clothes or make their own bed. And you might disagree with that, and it might work differently for you and your family. But for me, I think nobody pays me to make my bed. Nobody pays me to make my laundry. I do it because I enjoy having clean clothes and living in a tidy house. And that's why I do it. But again, on the topic of treating them with respect and all of that, also, I feel like, you know, my oldest daughter didn't ask to be a second mother. So there are times where she's starting to, now that she is 13, she is starting to stay home with her sisters a little bit. I would say air quotes babysit. It is more of like, I'm going down the street to do the grocery pickup. I'll be back in like 15 or 20 minutes. Things like that. I'm going for a walk in the neighborhood. I'm going to lock the door behind me. Stay here. Keep an eye on your sisters. I'll be back in 30 minutes. You know, it is things like that. Again, you might disagree, you know, but for me, I'm like, if she's babysitting, that's my job that she's making easier for me. She's watching my kids. So she does get allowance for that. I also would like pay her extra if she washes my car. Or one time I was just really busy and I really wanted my bed linens washed, and I paid her to wash and to change my bed. Because that's not her job. That's my job. So that's kind of where I draw the line. And again, you know, this is my first time having a teenager and this might not be perfect, but it kind of, that's kind of where I draw the line for us. So when she was 12, we started doing more of this kind of stuff, giving her responsibilities that were outside of, you know, washing dishes and doing her own laundry. So when she was 12, we decided, okay, she's old enough to have a phone. She's old enough to have an allowance. And we started giving her $12 a week because she was 12. She was very quick to remind us when she turned 13 that she was, you know, getting that cost of living raise. And she's going to bump it up. Don't forget, $13 a week now. So she got her cost of living raise. And she's getting 13 a week now. So we use the green light card. You've probably seen ads on TV or on Instagram for it. I'll include my link. I think I get like a referral code or something with it. And it is pretty useful. There are like checklists on there. She can check off if she's done certain chores. You don't have to send their allowance to them if they haven't done their chores. I have it on auto send. She just gets it regardless every Friday. They also get their own debit card, which is pretty cool. They can customize the picture. So she has a cute little picture on there and she can use it on Amazon. She can use it for Roblox. She can use it at Walmart, you know, things like that. It's a real working debit card, which is pretty cool. I think it has kind of helped her. She does her budget with it. So let me share just a little bit. And again, this is not perfect. This is just kind of how we decided to do it. So for her phone bill is $15 a month. So we do give her the allowance of $13 a week, but she pays us back for her phone bill. So for her $13 a week, this is how we have it split up. $375 a week goes for her phone bill. Basically, she gives us back that. She puts $1.30 a week in her savings account. And she puts $1.95 a week in her investment account. So it's 15% in her investment, 10% to save. Her phone bill is like 28% of her income, air quotes, income, which leaves her exactly $6 a week to spend on whatever she wants. So it is interesting to see her, that $13 comes in, but you got to pay your cell phone bill. You need to put your money in savings. You need to put your money in investments. Oh, now there's only six to spend. She's like, well, that goes fast. Yep. And to kind of have that conversation with her. Also kind of dipping her toe into her understanding her investments. Of course, she doesn't completely understand them yet, but kind of showing her her investment account online and showing her what the holdings are in her investment. She thinks that it's pretty cool that she owns a little piece of Tesla, that she owns a little piece of Facebook and Instagram, that she owns a little piece of Google and Coca-Cola and all these like big name companies that she recognizes, which don't get me wrong, that's pretty cool even as an adult. Like investing is pretty cool, honestly. And she, every once in a while, we'll get on there and we'll check like how much it's grown. The compound interest for her earning interest, it like blows her mind in her savings account and her investing account, because she's like, wait, they just gave me money? Why did the bank give me money? So kind of that lesson and her seeing the difference of how much her investments are earning her versus how much her savings account is earning her. And kind of having the conversation of saving versus investing, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. But it has been really interesting just to kind of, you know, go into that era of having a teenager and talking about it, and all of that has been really helpful. But we do talk about, my husband and I kind of have this debate on, we also want them to enjoy their childhood as much as they can. So, of course, there are ways, you know, chores, allowance, you know, babysitting, cutting grass, doing little things, you know, more and more as they get older. And we do kind of debate, and I'm sure that's going to be different for every family, but we do want them to have as much of a childhood as they possibly can, because we know that they have the rest of their lives to work. So it is kind of a struggle and a balance of how do we teach them responsibility? How do we teach them work ethic? But how do we let them enjoy the little bit, you know, the few scarce years of childhood that they do have? So we're not too much in a hurry for this. And we're hoping that with the right financial literacy, the right examples, the right, you know, push of saving, investing while they can and while they're still little, you know, while we do have control over it. And hopefully, you know, they're not going to have to really worry too much about it until they are, you know, high school, college age, and kind of, you know, helping them with that. And that internal battle as a parent of, oh, I want them to have a good work ethic and I want them to learn all of these things, but also they're only little for so long. And how do we balance those? Okay, so let's talk about saving and investing. First of all, listen to yourself and listen to the words that you use out loud in front of your kids. Saving and investing are not the same thing. Saving is, yes, important because we need an emergency fund. We need to be able to cash flow things like vacations and car repairs and maybe even buying vehicles, right? But that is not the same as actual investments. And both are important. Both have their own places, but they're not the same thing. And we do tend to use the words interchangeably. And we shouldn't, as an example to ourselves and in front of our kids. So for example, most savings accounts, you're going to get around 1%. If you do have a high yield savings account, maybe you're going to get more like 4%. But with an investment account, you should be making 7 to 10%. Usually when I calculate investments, I estimate about 8%. So just as an example, if you had $10,000 just in a lump sum, you let it sit in an account for 20 years, never added to it and never took anything from it. In a savings account at 1%, $10,000 would turn into $12,200. You would earn $2,200 in interest over 20 years. Okay. In an investment account, if you earned an average of 8% over 20 years, same $10,000, you would have $46,600. So you would earn $36,000 instead of $2,000. That's the difference between saving and investing. So we really have to stop for ourselves and for an example for our kids. We have to stop using saving and investing as interchangeable words because they're not the same thing. And both have their place. But they are different. Okay. And I think that the best thing that we can do for ourselves and for our kids is to automate saving and investing and doing both as soon as possible, as soon as you can afford to for yourself. And then as soon as your foundation is set, you know, saving and investing for your kids. Even if, like for my daughter, you're doing like $1 a week, it's something, it's building a habit. It's showing them that it does add up over time, all of that kind of stuff. So we can start small and we can increase later. So don't think if you can't do $100 a month, you do nothing, okay? It can be $1 a week. It can be $5 a month. It can be $10 a month. It can start small and increase later. But automating it is hands down the best thing that you can do because it feels like a bill. It feels like a non-negotiable. If you set it up the 1st of every month, the 15th of every month, every single Friday, it doesn't matter what you do. Set up some kind of automatic transfer to your savings, to your investing, and then if you can, for your kids as well. So the importance of investing, obviously, like we would love for our kids to be able to get an education, be able to retire, all of these things, but how? So there are a few different kinds of investing accounts. So there are the most popular, the most commonly known are 529s. The good thing about 529s is that they do lower your taxable income. Okay, so this is a really great thing if you're like trying to not pay more taxes than you really need to. There you go, 529s. Plus, you can use up to $10,000 annually per kid towards K through 12 tuition. So if your kids are in private school now, or they plan to be, some people just do private school in high school, or some people just do private school in elementary, or they do it all the way through. That is kind of a good thing to do, is you can fill up that 529 with money that you know you're going to spend on tuition, and just kind of then pay for tuition through the 529 and just kind of cycle the money through there to lower your taxable income. This is a loophole that a lot of wealthy people have been taking advantage of for a really long time. There are max contributions of how much you can put in per year, but it's super high, and it does vary per state. Like Texas is like $500,000 a year. So it's super high. Most people are not going to reach that. Some of the cons are that it can count against you for federal aid. And there are obviously stipulations on how you can use it. They did just in 2024 change it where if it is an unused 529, if you've had the account for 15 years, I believe you can roll it over into an IRA. So this is a brand new law, and it's changing a lot of people's minds, because before it was education only. You could leave it for your child's child to eventually inherit. You could pass it along to a sibling, things like that. But it was very restricted on how you could use it. It was basically college, private school, pass it on to a sibling or a grandchild, or that was kind of it. But now you can, if the account has been open for at least 15 years, you can roll it into an IRA. So that's a really big pro, and that is really converting a lot more people over to being pro 529. Another thing you can do is kind of the other side of, if you didn't want to do a 529, is doing like a UTMA, which like is a Uniform Transfer Minor Account. So it is not as tax exempt. You know, with 529, all of it is tax exempt. It's like it's a graduated scale of how much is tax exempt. But there are a lot less stipulations on how you can use it. So essentially, when your child becomes of adult age, which does vary per state, but it's like 18, 21, somewhere in there, they can use the money however they want. They can buy a car. They can buy a house. They can start a business. They can go to college with it. They can do whatever they want, which is a pro and a con, because legally it is their money. So they could go and do something totally irresponsible with it, but also they could do whatever they wanted. So that could be good and could be a bad thing, right? Again, it can impact your child's access to financial aid for college. And you know, they can do whatever they want with it. So, you know, some pros and some cons. Another really good account for your child is a custodial Roth IRA. The biggest stipulation with this is your kid does need to have an earned income. So some people, if they are business owners, will give their kid an earned income. I've heard this a lot around Instagram, is like, well, you know, my kid like vacuums my office and takes my trash out, or, you know, different things like that. Like for me, when I was growing up, my dad was in construction and I was constantly like sweeping floors, picking up nails. And I got paid for that. So if we would have been more financially literate, I could have been having a custodial IRA. I worked, you know, my parents always had different businesses. When I was really little, we had a donut shop. My mom loves to tell the story of how I worked the drive-thru at 3 years old. We had a restaurant when I was like in middle school and junior high, and I waited tables at age 10 to 15 and had a very good income. I bought myself Nikes when I was like 12. I could have been having a custodial IRA all of those years. The thing is that your kid has to pay taxes on the income that they have. So if they're paying taxes on it, they can have a custodial IRA. So if they are babysitting, as long as they're claiming it on their taxes, they can have a custodial IRA. Like regular IRAs, there is a max. 2024, that max is $7,000 for a custodial IRA, just like it is for an adult's IRA. So that is really, like, I wish I would have known that when I was, you know, busting my little 12-year-old butt waiting tables and legit making hundreds and hundreds of dollars per week. I wish I would have been investing. But those are things that we can pass along to our kids. Another thing is giving and philanthropy. You know, I see a lot of this exemplified if you do, like, belong to a church, or, you know, you are already giving to different charities. You know, kind of teaching your kids the importance of that. And we do this a lot around Christmas time of my kids see me and help. They do participate. You know, we've done, like, the Operation Shoebox thing at Christmas. We like to buy gifts for the Angel Tree kids and foster care kids and things like that. And they're always very generous and very giving. When they are, like, purging toys, they love to, you know, imagine another kid finding this doll and falling in love with this doll. And they love, you know, giving and sharing. And I think that that's something that's also really important, because it builds that kind of mindset in your kid, and that whole idea of making the world a better place. And that could be monetarily or just with the spirit of giving. My kids are really big on anti-littering. They love to, like, pick up trash and go on little rants about why would someone litter this earth of ours and all of this stuff. So they're also very caring towards animals. And so I think even though they don't really have necessarily the money to give towards, you know, environmental efforts or animal shelters or foster gifts for foster kids or things like that, I feel like if you instill that in their heart, that when they do have money to give, they will, right? And obviously we want to kind of instill that in them as a spirit of giving and helping and making the world a better place as we go. And I think it also is a really good conversation of, you know, not building, like, an entitlement and a greedy kind of kid as we go. So, of course, there are a lot of different money management tools and apps. You know, I talked about the Greenlight card. But honestly, one of the best things you can do is creating your own Excel spreadsheet, printing something out, giving them a notebook, a journal. I did make a worksheet for my daughter, and she wasn't really using it. Like, these kids are very tech savvy kids. They don't really want a lot of things written out for them. To her, she's like, she sees it on her app and she moves her money where it needs to go. And that's kind of perfect for her. So kind of exploring different ways that will work for your kid, kind of knowing your kid, are they a paper learner or digital learner, and different things like that. So we are also going to link in the show notes for you guys different resources as well to kind of dig into this topic. Like I said, I'm not an expert on this. I just wanted to share kind of what we're doing as we go. But I have had a couple of different episodes that I think could be really helpful for you guys is why we're not forcing our kids to go to college. That's episode 9. And we'll link to that, of course. Episode 87 is where I interviewed Rachel Rainbolt from Sage Family. She talks a lot about this, and she's a gentle parenting expert. She's like my parenting hero. I soak up everything she says about parenting. So we did kind of talk about that as well. Her podcast also is really great. And Andy from Marriage, Kids, and Family, I also had him on as a guest previously, but he has a whole course. It's called Make My Kid a Millionaire. So I'll link that. And we're going to link to a few Plutus finalists. These are It's My Money, Kids Money Academy, Stock Explore, Teach Kids Money. We'll link to those. They are a little more experts than I am. And also a couple of articles that will hopefully be a jumping off point if you're wanting to learn more about this. So I hope that this episode was helpful to you guys. I hope that it answered some of your questions, maybe got you thinking a little bit differently about how to have these conversations with your kids. But my biggest takeaway, what I want your biggest takeaway to be from this whole conversation is, let's live out loud in front of our kids. It's okay to not know everything. It's okay to learn out loud in front of them, and answer their questions as openly and honestly as you can. And I think that that's the best possible thing that we can do. So hope that this was helpful to you guys. That is all for me this week.
Thanks for hanging out for another episode of a Sunny Side Up Life podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend and leave a review. 5-star reviews are what help the podcast grow. Don't forget to check out the episode show notes for links to everything that we talked about in today's episode. And if you want to access all of my free resources, or you want to learn how to work with me one-on-one, head over to asunnysideuplife.com to get started. And if you want to keep up with me in the day-to-day, don't forget to follow me on social media at asunnysideuplife. Well, that's all for me this week. Bye, guys.